Welcome to CBuzz, the Columbus Chamber of Commerce's award-winning podcast and also Columbus's first business-focused podcast. Our show is presented by the Columbus Chamber of Commerce and Capital University. My name is Michaela Hunt, brand journalist and your host for CBuzz, where we bring you unique and impactful stories directly from leaders right here in our Central Ohio business community. We are coming to you from our home at Capital University's Convergent Media Center, which is a collaborative space for students and faculty to study music, film, creative writing, and digital media. We are excited to tell stories that motivate and inspire you through this platform on a regular basis. Today, we're sitting down with Peter Coratola, President and CEO of Ease Logistics. Ease Logistics passionately delivers reliable logistics and transportation solutions with an unparalleled customer experience, reducing your cost and risk. Ease Logistics is a multi-operational supply chain and transportation solution provider, revolutionizing the customer experience. Peter, so glad to have you. I think we're going to have a good conversation today.
Thank you for the invite and introduction. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Ease Logistics and why Ease Logistics and how your company is really helping the Columbus logistics industry.
So like you said, Ease Logistics is a full service provider of global supply chain solutions for select customers, right? Predominantly based here in Central Ohio. We've got three locations operating here. Four locations. We just opened our new warehouse out in Marysville.
Oh, okay.
Right. Ease Logistics has a very specific way of doing things, and it all started back from a service engagement idea. I mean, from when the company started in 2014. When you look at my experience and kind of what led us here, prior to Ease Logistics, I didn't have too much logistics experience. I don't know if I should go on record saying
that. Well, I think you should, because that's where it gets interesting, Peter. Yeah.
To the customers listening, I promise I'm qualified. You know, I've been everything from a waiter to a coach. I've worked in hotels, worked on the asset side, worked on the service side. And Ease started with really identifying and increasing that unique experience on the moment of interaction with the user, which very wordy. When you sum it up, it's pretty much progressing any kind of interaction you have when you're dealing with someone in the space. And are we progressing them forward? Is their journey, are they satisfied with their journey, right? Are we respecting their time?
Yeah.
And when you kind of tie those three things together, it was kind of the idea behind Ease Logistics.
So is that what sets you apart, the service engagement that you're talking about? You don't always get that when it comes to working with a logistics company? Or do you get it in a different way?
I think there's different ways of how companies go about service. Mm-hmm. I think there's different ways about how customers go about the service aspect in the industry. Every customer has their own way of how they look at it. Every provider has their own way.
I love the background you have in different areas, because when you think about our lives and you think about what we do in some of those experiences, whether as a waiter or a coach, you think about processes, right? Like you think through that. How has that made your eye a bit different given, you know, what sets Ease apart?
It's the systematic approach to what you said is in the moment of having this unique experience with the end user. The end user could be a customer, a carrier, a provider, even our own employees. In the moment of interaction, are we actually taking strides to impact their journey and create a whole different kind of experience? Right. And when you're process driven and when you start respecting the things like time and then really focusing on their journey and you tie it all up, you start to see this retention. Right. It's almost like they get drawn in because they're intrigued. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they're not waiting 20 minutes to get responded to. On the moment of impact, we're acknowledging. And it seems so simple on face value. But when you look behind the scenes of what's going on, it takes a lot to get it done. Right. So next to our competitors, we may not run as lean or we may have more people to get our service done. However, when you look at our retention rates across the board from our main users of customers, clients, and employees, or customers, carriers, and employees, we have industry-leading retention rates.
It tells me your customer service level is really high. That's what that tells me, which is so important as a customer or a client to feel that way.
There's a little bit of, I would say, not OCD, but there's a we really emphasize the service side and
attention to detail on the service side.
Right, attention to detail. It's kind of the idea behind why when somebody that's building a house and they're doing the framing, they make sure all the words on the lumber are going the right way.
Okay, that's a great analogy.
It doesn't make the house stronger. It's just the attention to detail. And when you look through the fine points, when you have that kind of awareness, it just inherently increases your attention to detail. And it increases every interaction starts to now actually bring value.
I mean, I'm almost about to call it white glove service and logistics, which I've not used that terminology before, so I don't know if that would work, but that's what it feels like you're explaining to me, really caring for every single detail in the process. Okay, so let's talk about why logistics is so important right now and how it's changing as a whole. What have you seen in your experience as a CEO in this space right now?
Well, logistics is, with all due respect, is always important. I think it's just very, very popular right now.
It's buzzy. Right. Yeah.
And it's because it's finally impacted at the consumer level. Inventory levels changing, and all of a sudden we can't buy cars. Toilet paper's not on shelves. Foods, you go to the grocery and the shelves are empty. All of a sudden you're seeing this change in dynamic of a consumer impact. Historically, we've all been through it. We all go through produce season and it runs out and you go to the grocery and all of a sudden there's no oranges.
There was no strawberries last night when I went to the grocery store, yeah.
So those are the small points that us, on a consumer level, we've kind of just always been used to. But when you take it the one step further that's happened over the last couple of years, and then you're starting to take away the resources that we need to live, or if we want to go buy a car, it's really hit home with the consumer.
Yeah.
So that's really brought it to a more popular light. And it's kind of exposed the global supply chain inefficiencies of what's going on behind the scenes.
I mean, supply chain even. So logistics has been kind of a buzzy thing for a while, but supply chain's been the real buzzword over those last 2 years, like you're alluding to. You know, what's been happening from your perspective? I've heard so many explanations of this thing. I would love to know what you have to say about it, Peter.
To kind of put in perspective of what's going on in the current environment or what we've seen build up for the last 24 months, you really got to go back 10, 15 years and kind of look at the evolution of the big companies like Amazon, Wayfair, Walmart, where they have adjusted to consumer demand, and now they've started to have to offer this cornucopia of products, right, to stay competitive. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not feasible for them to hold this inventory, so they go into low inventory supply chains where everything's outsourced, right? And then they introduce the transportation side as part of the customer experience. So not only are we going to offer everything, we're going to get it there the next day, right? And all it takes is one kink in the chain, like COVID, to really expose how truly hard that is when one container ship can get delayed and it's a domino effect.
So that is what we've been dealing with.
In my opinion, yes.
Your opinion, yeah, because I've heard a lot of different explanations. You bring up Wayfair, it's so interesting because there are decisions made every day on what that kind of detail level on the end of transportation. And I'm thinking about, we ordered like a really like kind of large cabinet for our living room. We moved right as the pandemic started. Perfect. And we got, right, it was perfect timing. And so we got the cabinet from Wayfair and it was completely busted. And you know what? They didn't want it back. They said, we don't want it. Set it out. We will reimburse you. I mean, those are the kinds of decisions the companies are making when they're dealing with that much supply and demand, I would take it.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, and that's a perfect example. Before, when the supply chain is working as it should, it costs some pennies on the dollar to bring it back or reverse logistics. When it's increasing more than it ever has or cost more than it's ever had just to get it to you, it's a business decision for every company to make, saying, just go ahead and keep it. And we're seeing that among customers left and right, from the food and beverage side to the automotive side, not having returns.
Yeah.
It's not worth the time, or it's not worth the transportation costs to even engage with it.
You know, taking a look at your professional background, your experience really spans the client and provider sides of logistics. So, and you've kind of been alluding to that with carriers, brokerages, shippers. How does that expertise help you really kind of with all that we're talking about? I mean, is that not normal to have those kind of three categories, if you will, or do you deal with it a bit differently?
we try to group it as the best we can into those three user types. Mm-hmm. It helps us at least level set expectations when you talk about bigger groups, right? And again, when you look at my experience, a lot more when I was a waiter, a lot of those things I learned really have shown to be beneficial in the industry. You know, when you go to a restaurant and your food's delayed, usually it's the waiter or the waitress that's taking the blunt end of it, right?
Yeah, you're getting the heat.
You're getting the heat.
Yeah.
And it could be for a hundred of different reasons, but they're getting the heat. So rather than letting the user, in that case, a customer, wait for a further explanation, the idea behind of our service model is let's just provide as much information as we can at the point of inception and address it spot on. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're not wasting time on follow-ups, not answering the information that needs to be out there. We're very methodical in that every interaction has to hit a certain kind of threshold that's answering the questions assumed or put out there pretty clearly for every interaction to increase that efficiency.
You've talked a little bit, you know, about how you might have a larger team than your competitor, but what that is equivalent to when it comes to service you provide. So I completely appreciate that. But how have you managed to retain and grow your workforce with that? While so many other organizations, Peter, in the industry, they've struggled.
It is a struggle. And it's a daily challenge with engaging with the employees to get that kind of retention rate. What you find out is you got to be dynamic and you have to adjust to the dynamic and adjust and ensure that the employee journey is living up to expectations on what brought them in the door.
Yeah.
Right. We have a great atmosphere. Our office is awesome. Right. We do a great job of attracting, but it's the challenge of keeping and retention. It's go ahead.
I was going to ask you what makes your office awesome. You got to tell me.
Well, it's that open environment. It's got some cool decor. We got some cool posters and sayings on the walls. We got giant pictures of our trucks driving through the city, right?
Okay.
So it really cultivates a teamwork atmosphere. And I think there's this hum. You know, you walk in on Monday or at 10 a.m., it's humming. It's buzzing, right? It's intoxicating almost. It makes you want to be out there, right? So I think we've done a great job of really building an atmosphere that allows for both independent work, but also for us to work together as a team and come together.
So you think that is what has helped retain and grow your workforce?
I think I can tell you this right now, ping pong tables don't get good people in the door. I mean,
you heard it here, yeah. Guys. It's not going to get it for you. Right.
They're cool, but I can tell you in a competitive industry or competitive atmosphere, people don't want to take away and go break, you know. They want to have their time when they take lunch and take their breaks, but they want to be in an atmosphere that cultivates that kind of competitive atmosphere, I guess, to challenge and move forward. I think it's the dynamic how we've adjusted to the workforce demands. So over the last probably 18 months, we've created more IT and analytical jobs than we've ever had.
Really? Okay.
So now we're starting to attract a whole different demographic. We're mm-hmm. starting to attract people that probably never would have looked at logistics. Does it have a direct impact to our operations on a day-to-day? Not yet. But as the company continues to grow and we invest in the technologies that lets us be reactive off the analytics and the IT investments, you know, we're building the house essentially to give us that avenue.
If someone's interested in the logistics career field, how do you suggest they get started?
Take a holistic approach, you know. Don't just stop at your initial search of what is transportation or supply chain. There are so many avenues out there. And we have this same talk with some of the local universities and schools. Logistics and supply chain tends to be one of the first courses that first-year students get into.
Mm-hmm.
But it has like a 70% drop-off rate between year one and year two.
Really?
Right. And it's because people don't understand the career paths.
So we've got to start doing a better job talking about those early on for less student drop-off because, I mean, this is the future.
Right. I mean, I would like to think, and for all the future workforce, it is, but it's working with the community, it's working with the universities, colleges to shed light on the career paths. The reason why a lot of first-year students go into second year go to finance is because the career path seems to be CFO.
Okay. Yeah.
The mindset is not there to people understand that supply chain and logistics has the same kind of avenue, right? And a global impact that is continuous and continuously changing.
Global impact, which you said it right there. I mean, it does. Same kind of path and global impact to it. I wanted to ask you before I move away from kind of your workplace. You kept saying competitive. Is there a dashboard? Like some companies, I want to say, what is it? Covey, Four Disciplines of Execution, talks about dashboards. Like, do you guys have a dashboard, a scoreboard that you're looking at that helps you keep score?
Yeah. So that's another big investment that we've had over the past, 18 months is investing in these dashboards for each employee to see their daily KPIs, their month-to-date, year-to-date. Where they're trending.
Their stats. Yeah.
Right. And now that could be looked at. It's not a micromanaging. It's, you know, when engaging with employees, that was the feedback we got. They want to know where they stand. They want to know what can they do to get better? What can they do to, you know, impact the company? So when you do that and you tie it to a service model that's rooted in time, it starts to dish out this model where not only their KPIs are rooted in time, so is the service model. It allows you to really start to understand, how can we scale? How many people does it take to do X? How many people does it take to do Y?
So basically you're employing and growing athletes or athletic state of minds. I mean, they want to know their numbers and how they can improve them.
Yeah. And I think it's athletes. We attract all sorts of people. And I think what we attract the most are people that are okay and accept and want that environment of continuous development.
Yeah. Which I think, you know, you have to be ready for when you're talking about dashboards and wanting to grow yourself. I love it, though. I'm going to kind of switch things up because you guys have a major focus on giving back. You have your Give With Ease platform. I love that name. For you, why was it so important to start that and to support the communities where we live and work?
Communities are your biggest cheerleaders, right? It is, there's a lot of rewards as you go and you start and grow a company, mm-hmm. but being able to impact your local community is one of the best rewards that you can get. And then when you show the current workforce, future workforce, why it's important, why it's the value we get in being connected with the community, hearing the issues that are going on, but celebrating the progress, it really makes for this collective relationship where we work with our communities, we help where we can, but they celebrate us and they're, like I said, they're our biggest cheerleaders.
You started Ease in 2014. You were 7 years out of high school when you started this company. Is that right? Am I doing the math right here?
Something like that. Oh, gosh.
I mean, so you go to school, you have these other experiences, which I loved how you brought it, that everyone should have kind of this holistic experience coming in. What's one of the biggest changes in consumer expectations you've seen since you started it back then?
One of the biggest changes you have to think is just this push for visibility, right? This push for visibility. And now when the large consumer product providers have now introduced transportation as a part of the service.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with. And what you see is it's not always feasible, right? Mm-hmm. And it only takes a few road bumps, pun intended, for it to delay, for it to kind of get flipped upside down.
Yeah.
But it's this constant drive from all the way from tier one suppliers to tier three suppliers to food producers to now the consumer that has this need or this need for visibility, and it's challenging.
You know, the pandemic environment, of course, in and of itself, as we kind of have talked a little bit about, challenging, but you've thrived. What has been your biggest lesson learned from this moment?
Invest and celebrate your IT teams if you have the ability to invest in them. Our IT team put us in a position to acclimate or adjust to the work from home side. Mm-hmm. Historically, logistics and logistics providers have always operated on very robust systems. And like I was saying, in this environment, we're all working together. COVID hit, and all of a sudden, we have to be pushed out, right?
Yeah.
Our IT team reacted so quick and gave us the capabilities to get, at that time, 100-some employees remotely deployed while still working at their same output. And that has been the single biggest, looking back, so happy to invest before that time in the IT, mm-hmm. because it did give us, they completely eliminated our worries about being able to do it.
whoever heard this in IT, some of our listeners just clapping and just hooting and hollering over that. So invest and celebrate your IT team and what they can do for you.
You have to. It's a team that is so easily forgot about because when everything's working as it should, it's not shining a light, right?
Yeah.
But when you're put in those situations where you have to react and it's solely based on being able to do it, they step up, and it's something that needs to be widely celebrated. You know, they need to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. They gave us the ability to not skip a beat.
You know, we have individuals in our audience who are advocates throughout the city and the region. What area or pain point in the industry would you like our elected officials to know about or help with? That's a good one, isn't it?
That is a good one.
It's not too tough, but it's a good one.
It's a good one. You gotta be careful. Yeah.
Gotta be careful. Yeah. What do you want people to know? How can they help you? How can they advocate for this industry?
The continuous push on this infrastructure of the roads and the road systems is something that needs to continuously be brought to light. The bridges, the roads, the bypasses, it puts more trucks out of order probably than anything else out there, right? There has been now some push for CDL, helping drivers get CDLs at a younger age. It's good in theory, but on paper, we can do that, but then we get stopped at the underwriters for insurance at increased premiums X-fold.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So mm-hmm. then we can get them, but then you can't get them insured, right?
So that doesn't make a lot of sense,
right?
Necessarily.
And so what it comes down to is for the individuals that are helping us drive forward, we got to make sure that we're diversifying our pot when we go talk to the community about what they need. A trucking company that has between 1 and 10 trucks or 11 and 20 or 30 and 40 all have different issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have different capabilities, just like a company that's like Ease at 170 employees opposed to a company that has 400 employees. Our pain points are different. And I think it's just making sure that you diversify where you're getting the feedback on really what are the hurdles at those certain levels.
Mm-hmm. And so the infrastructure bill, I'm sure you were very, you're curious to see how it plays out too.
Very curious.
Now that everything has kind of been set in motion, what's next for the places where you guys...
Right. I mean, we got $500 billion going into the road systems. So, you know, I'm excited to see what that actually transitions to. I'm excited to see how the CDL application transitions.
How old do you have to be right now to get a CDL?
Right now, the 21, 25 to really be have an underwriter.
Right. 25 for an underwriter to look at you and have kind of what I would call maybe an average rate.
Right.
Okay.
But right now they want to drop it all the way to 18.
Okay.
Which, you know.
If you can't cover them, that's your point that you're making in terms of what our elected officials need to know about.
But there are different ways to approach that and how you do the routing and what they can haul that if they were talking to the suppliers or talking to the trucking companies, we would be able to find a solution where we're able to get people at those ages come in. Limit risk, limit community impact, where we can actually use that workforce.
Got it. And that makes a lot of sense when those conversations are being had. You know, you're a young CEO, you've seen a lot, you have this holistic approach. What logistics and supply chain technology are you most looking forward to in, let's say, the next 5 to 10 years? Like, where's the areas really that you want to make significant investments and innovate when we look at this?
The autonomous side is very intriguing.
Ooh, I didn't know we were going to go there today.
It is. It's very intriguing for multiple reasons. Outside of it, helping the drivers and driver safety, so then it does make sense, and then it does help with younger drivers. What we've looked at it is creating more value from the driver aspect. So when a fully autonomous truck is in transit and in a secured or the right route, we can increase their value by having them do other things. Maybe they become account managers. Maybe they work for IT, right?
Mm-hmm.
While they're in transit. So you can start to increase the value of the CDL driver, which hopefully would attract more people into that side.
So what is the reality of this happening? Because weren't they testing this on 33? Somebody came in with one company to do some of that. Like, when are we actually, we're so used to seeing Teslas, right? Mm-hmm. When are we actually going to see this happen with these larger, these CDL-based vehicles?
Well, the Smart 33 corridor that's up in, you know, through Dublin all the way up through East Liberty, they are leading the charge, I would say, at least locally, to my knowledge, of putting the right structure in place, or the infrastructure. To get there, you're right, we aren't probably on the latter part of the 10 years.
Like, I didn't know if they were making cabs yet that could do this, I guess.
They are, but they're not fully autonomous. So when you get into fully autonomous trucks, there's a lot of regulations that restrict them. Because of the payload and because of the overall weight, they're restricted to certain governing laws of only they can go so fast or they can only operate at certain times of the day. So then the actual application to use case is very limited.
Yeah.
Right? So just that continuous investment of the infrastructure. Because then once we go through autonomous, then the next step is EV. Or it might be the other way around.
So electric vehicles. So it's so both of those things are kind of in the future where you exist.
Right. But right now, if you had 10 EV trucks and you went and plugged them in at your warehouse, you'd probably shut down the grid in that local area, right?
Right, right.
So we would have EV trucks, but nobody would be able to turn their lights on. So it's kind of, we need the infrastructure to keep up with us, but we still need to be pushing the charge because those are the technologies that are going to make us more efficient and attract the workforce for tomorrow, add the value, create safety, lessen the impact of the community.
So for you, before you make investments or as you look ahead to the next 5 or 10 years, you're really looking for that infrastructure to come first.
Right. So that means that you have to, where historically we've looked at the global impact that we can have. When you get into innovation, you really have to tighten up your scope. And you can't even look at something as big as a state. You got to look at a regional. Can we figure it out here? Are there customers that we can supply through these use cases to show? And then get community buy-in.
Right, because they have to understand and be able to kind of adopt and accept kind of what the standards are and what that looks like for safety and community, too. I completely get that. When it comes to the next generation of students interested in logistics, what challenges are ahead and what should they begin to think about or think about solutions for?
Well, as that, the EV technology, or it might be hydrogen, who knows? You didn't hear it here first,
maybe I have. Maybe right? This is the first time I'm having this conversation. Right? Maybe this is the first time some people at home are hearing it.
Right. So then how will we transition that infrastructure to smart routing and be able to use the assets accordingly? Right. So future students should be looking at, as this evolution happens, how are the global supply chains that produce cars right now, how are they going to change? Who are going to be the new providers? Where are they coming from, right? Mm-hmm. How are we going to overcome those hurdles? How are we going to route trucks to make sure that they're going to be able to charge in transit? What if the truck is hauling more freight than it should and the battery life is less? So how are we going to plan for that? So it's not just a smart routing. It's how do we apply the true nature of the infrastructure that's available at that time to make sure that we can use these technologies and get them moving so everyone wants to buy in.
So I have to ask a little more about this hydrogen versus electric thing. Sorry, because now I'm curious. Does hydrogen, is it a more efficient way for trucks to be able to haul versus electric? That's a guess, but tell me more about that.
In my opinion.
In your opinion.
Where both technologies stand, and where we can see the technologies for a couple years out, EV trucks have serious limitations when it comes to being able to be applied at a commercial level. The weight of the cargo that continuously changes of its pallet weight, or they overloaded or underloaded, adding then weather as an aspect of its cold weather, warm weather, right? Seems to be a continuous challenge, right? And anybody that drives a Tesla or any other electric cars will tell you, if your payload increases, your battery life exponentially decreases.
So you're finding that next charging station real quick.
Right. So then you're starting to impact drivers' ability to service routes, where right now a diesel driver can service between 500 and 550 miles a day, drastically reducing it to about 220, 250.
Wow.
Now hydrogen, a little more dangerous maybe in some aspects, but that has the ability to truly take commercial vehicles and carry the payload in a cost-effective, environmental-friendly application when the technology catches up.
So that's the key. When the technology catches up and safety can be addressed, I take it through that too, this is going to be a really viable option if they can do that.
to at the current time, that seems to be the best avenue, if not the only avenue, where we will actually be able to have a full transition of application if we're getting away from diesel.
Super interesting. Because, yeah, that's a conversation that's not had in the regular, you know, car market. So, no, that's really, that's a nugget that we were not familiar with till today. So that's definitely a first.
Happy to sprinkle that little knowledge for you.
Thank you. You definitely dropped it. So one of the reasons we have conversations like the one we're having today here on CBuzz is we believe, you know, in continued personal and professional development, and that it's one of the most valuable aspects as a leader in business, what you can kind of impart to others. So I would love to know, is there a podcast? Is there a book? Is there a show? Is there an involvement in a group? Any of those things that really is influencing you as of late?
Well, I definitely would say the Columbus Chamber is definitely one that helps me better my profession. Got to throw that out there. I just finished Pitch Anything by Oren Claff.
Pitch Anything.
Yes. So that is a very interesting read about the individual ability, the individual process, or how you navigate through sales. And sometimes that when you say the word sales, you automatically, I feel like you lose 60% or somebody, you know, attention, because they think it's base sales. It's got a very interesting approach to how to navigate interactions in a professional setting. So I took a lot from that, and not just our customer engagements, but all of our employee engagements, our carrier engagements. He positions every interaction against, I've said it a few times, and he kind of breaks down what's going through people's minds and how you get through to kind of for the listener to be receptive.
So that it's not just sales.
It's not just
you're
sales.
Solving problems, I'm sure.
It is. It's learning how to know your audience and pick up on social cues or physical cues or in the moment, and how to react to those and how to kind of change the narrative to make sure that your listener wants to be receptive. Then I just started, let me finish, Losing My Virginity.
Okay.
It's by Richard Branson.
It's Virgin Galactic.
Yes. Autobiography.
Yeah. Virgin Atlantic. I don't know why I said Galactic is part of those,
yes,
right?
Virgin Atlantic.
It's one arm of the company.
So it's a great book. It's definitely interesting to read his journey, right? And how he's got entire organizations to buy into the Virgin way.
Yeah.
Right. So I found just reading about somebody that I admired in an industry. I mean, he took airlines, cruise ships, records, and made them sexy. And it's kind of incredible how he's done that and been able to keep that same kind of look through multiple different industries. So if I would give any advice, is if you're looking for something to read, find a company that you might shop at every day and see who, if there's any autobiographies about the person who started it. And that's really intrigued me the most, to continue to read these and see how other people that I look up to have really started, what their own journey has been.
Because the value system of that company, or the value system of the founder of the company, or the way that they do things, you know, if you appreciate that, you want to know more about how they got to create what they created.
For sure. And there's also companies you might want to say, I don't want to ever be like that.
That's true.
And those books are out there as well.
Yeah.
But it's definitely helped me on a professional and personal side, just taking a step back and looking at things from a different perspective.
Well, Peter, it was great to talk to you today. Thank you for coming in and making me think about some things in logistics that I had not thought about before.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, it's definitely an industry in Columbus that is massive, and your perspective has been good today. For our listeners, if you want to learn more about all of Peter's endeavors, please visit easelogistics.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to let us know by sharing your ratings and reviews on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you may be listening. Your reviews really help people find our show and hear community stories just like Peter's and the others we bring to you on a regular basis. We read that feedback and we value your ideas as we start planning for future episodes. I'm your host, Michaela Hunt. Our entire crew thanks you for joining us, and we look forward to our next conversation.